Gildan Media, a division of Recorded Books, presents Growing the Top Line, Four Key Questions and the Proven Process for Scaling Your Business, by Cliff Farah. Narrated by Michael Butler Murray. Publisher's note: the print and ebook versions of this book include visual elements. You will hear the visuals discussed and referenced in this audiobook. Limit of liability, disclaimer of warranty. While the publisher and author have used their best efforts in preparing this book, they make no representations or warranties with respect to the accuracy or completeness of the contents of this book, and specifically disclaim any implied warranties of merchantability or fitness for a particular purpose. No warranty may be created or extended by sales representatives or written sales materials. The advice and strategies contained herein may not be suitable for your situation. You should consult with a professional where appropriate. Neither the publisher nor author shall be liable for any loss of profit or any other commercial damages, including, but not limited to, special, incidental, consequential, or other damages. Introduction. 20 years ago, in the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks, I started a growth strategy consulting firm called the Beacon Group. Like the business world and the entire nation, we were in uncharted waters. The economy was a wreck, and we needed a path to recovery. I thought the name was fitting because, as a sailor, I knew that beacons were a critical part of safe navigation. We were pioneers, breaking new ground in a field we called growth strategy. This was 2001. There was no Blue Ocean Strategy or the Innovator's Dilemma books to guide us. No class on growth strategy was offered at B School. We learned through trial and error by working with clients to help them scale, codifying the growth lessons we learned along the way, and by repeating them with other client teams. Originally written as a training tool for our employees, this book began as a tool to teach consistency, a metric of quality in the services world. There are plenty of one-hit wonders in the business world, but we've always been focused on how the best of the best think about growth. Consistency was our goal, and in 2010, we began using our model to show clients how we developed our growth strategies. This model has been accepted as a standard with leading C-level strategy practitioners at Beacon's clients. This book contains interviews from current and prior leaders at major corporations, including Intel, Medtronic, CDW, Johnson & Johnson, Juniper Networks, Nike, Pratt & Whitney, Eaton, Motorola, SAP, Chase, Raytheon, the U.S. Army, Corning, EDS, Oracle, Crate & Barrel, Texas Instruments, the World Health Organization, General Electric, and Cisco, among others. You'll also see learnings from successful entrepreneurs and operators of nonprofit organizations. Our model applies to every form of business. This book serves two target audiences, although I think all growth strategists will find it valuable. Audience one is a first-time growth strategist. This is anyone new to planning the top line or revenue growth of a business. Perhaps they're an entrepreneur at a startup, or a freshly promoted employee in a Fortune 100 enterprise. If you fall into this category, this book was designed to teach you how to think about the development of a growth strategy and to give you the tools to build your own. The second audience is the seasoned growth strategy practitioner. Whether you've been elevated to run strategy across your organization, or you are looking to standardize a stale or scattered planning process. It is amazing how many companies follow a patchwork approach to strategy development and struggle to maintain quality of thought and consistency of information as they consolidate plan across their multiple business units around the world. The past 30 years have been a wonderful journey, and I'm grateful to have had opportunities to serve clients around the world as they built and executed their growth strategies. This book shares what I've learned throughout my career, but especially what we've learned at Beacon completing over 1,500 projects in the past 20 years for our global client base. Please read this book more than once. I've tried to keep the tone conversational, but the message is layered and takes some consideration to fully absorb. The stories, the process, the method are all things that, as you gain experience, you'll find you can revisit to find learnings that you missed when you read it the first time. Growth strategy: what it is and why companies fail at it. Harrison sat in front of his computer, looking at but not seeing the monitor. His brain was racing, and he hadn't slept well in over a week. A former engineer, Harrison had been put on a management development rotation. So far, he'd worked in product development, manufacturing, sales, and now was in a product marketing role. Always a producer for his team, this was an entirely new environment for him. He had done some training on marketing, but it was mid-January, and he had been given the charter to lead the development of the strategy for his product line with a briefing, due in 8 weeks for review with the business unit leadership. It was overwhelming. Where to begin? He had last year's plan and a template to fill out, but it felt wrong. Formulaic, stale, checking the box. Who cared about market segment share, or average sales price, or all the other tables that he had to fill out? He knew what it meant to design a product and manufacture it, and knew that both departments were stretched thin. He felt the challenge of selling something new as the company had a retiring sales force, and a new requirement for a new solution sale. In his gut, he felt that the reality of feet on the street didn't line up with these forms that the company had used for the past decade. His boss told him to just update for this year's plan. But rather than mailing it in, he felt the awesome responsibility of doing a good job. If you work in the corporate world, at some point, you will be or have been Harrison. And you were right to feel this disconnect between what you knew the real challenges of the job to be and the traditional annual planning document you were given. When you mention growth strategy, a few different reactions occur. If you are telling friends what you do, their eyes glaze over. If you are being told you have a new role, you may panic a bit. If you are the one letting people know they are now responsible for developing it, you may be a bit concerned about what you will get back from them. Growth strategy development is the application of strategic thought to the challenge of growth. In its best form, it clearly articulates how you are going to achieve an objective, what you will do, who will do it, when it will occur, and why it is necessary to reach your goal. It reflects the strengths and weaknesses of your organization, the market landscape you will compete in, the adversaries you face, and the resources you have. In the past 30 years, I've been lucky enough to work with the best of the best at Fortune 200 clients in healthcare, defense, financial services, software, hardware, professional services, industrials, pharma, consumer goods, technology, energy, education, and retail. There are several key learnings that emerge when I look back on their growth strategy practices. 1. Everyone has a slightly different approach, although the very best have a structured, teachable, repeatable methodology. 2. If you know that it's all about the team that is executing. 3. There are core market elements universally assessed by the best of the best. 4. New business models have become recognized as disruptive and powerful tools. 5. Where you play geographically matters. 6. Timing is everything. Our process and framework incorporates these concepts in this book. Successful growth strategists are clearly not dreamers. They recognize the challenge of implementation and are able to harness the knowledge and experience in an organization to mitigate risk. In fact, successful growth strategists are risk mitigators, not risk takers. They are pragmatic and know that successful growth is measured not by what you promise, but by what you deliver. And delivery is extremely easy to measure for most clients by answering a single question. Did you hit the top-line revenues associated with the plan when you were supposed to? If it were just about sales, this would be a relatively easy exercise. But sustainable growth has to also be about return on investment, ROI, and profitability. If I gave you an unlimited budget, then inorganic growth, or growth through acquisition, would let you easily hit any revenue target. You would just buy companies until their combined revenue hit the goal you had. Problem solved, right? While for some companies acquisition is a core weapon in their arsenal, generally the mixed bag of acquired company profitability and the ongoing challenges of integration of the different companies would likely fail on sustainability and ROI. A reality of business, especially large enterprise, is the sensitivity to a predictable defined return on investment. So we will consider that in our process. Cost matters. And as you think about a successful growth plan, it has to include the level of expenditure required to achieve that growth. Simply put, growth strategy is a plan to drive revenue growth. More practically, it's a way that leaders of businesses think about how they will align resourcing with opportunity to achieve a goal. As an optimist coming through the ranks in the consulting industry, I've always believed that there is no growth goal that is unachievable if the will is there. History shows that to be true, but it's never without extraordinary challenge. For sustainable success, there is always a balancing act that you find best represented in the profit equation. Profit equals revenue minus cost. You will always hear the critique from reviewers that a plan is pie in the sky. By that, they really mean that the resourcing to achieve the plan isn't reasonable, or available, or within plan. We will come back to the cost side later. But what's important to realize is that cost cutting is a finite game. You can only cut cost to what is required to produce the good or service being offered. Revenue, however, is infinite, limited only by imagination and determination. That's how you think about it, right? Entrepreneurs understand this well, as do newly minted general managers, GMs, or even those like Harrison, tasked with taking point on an annual plan. You can literally do anything to drive growth. It's overwhelming. Hell, everyone today wants to be visionary, a disruptor, a magical leader of change in the markets. Consistent growth strategy development takes time, focus, effort, and knowledge. No one exemplifies these qualities better than James Klein, one of the most successful, accomplished strategists I know. James is the president of both the Infrastructure and Defense Products Division at Qorvo Corporation, as well as their newly formed Qorvo Biotechnologies Division. I can't show you his financial performance in the decades I've known him due to disclosure restrictions. But if he was a major league ball player, he'd be in the Hall of Fame. James has created more value for his employers in his career than just about anyone I know. But he doesn't forget how he got there. I grew up in technology as an engineer early on and then really went into project management and program management. And then I took over a group. So now I had a business to run. This was the first time I had to think, okay, well, I've got this thing. Now what in the world do I do with it? Where do we go? Where do we invest money? What business do we want to be in? It may have come naturally to me because of my dad. He had retired from the Air Force and started his own couple of small companies. And I remember what we would usually argue about was where we should invest money. So strategy was an early thing to me. Since maybe in my teens, I've thought about how to grow a business. And so it's been a part of me for a long time, but probably reduced to practice when I first took over as a director of an organization. James is a master of growth strategy development and execution. He's pretty rare. You come across people who can think about how you could grow, but very few of them are capable of driving that growth. I really enjoy his recollection of where he started. Early on, I was at TI, Texas Instruments, and I took over the space business. We were trying to decide what we had. We had started the space business on one very particular set of products, and we said, now that we got this, how do we expand it? Where else do we go? So the first thing for me was just try to look at what did the market look like. And it is particularly hard on the defense side to understand markets. What are we good at? What were the markets? How big could we be? What did we need to invest? And we went through that process. Now you know at TI and other large companies that usually have some guidance, you fill out these charts, and so you get a little bit of guidance on how to move forward. But I would say it was really trying to understand what the market looked like, and how did that intersect our technology. I am a really big James Klein fan, and he's representative of the people I sought out to participate in this book. Throughout this book, I'll share stories from varied perspectives at a broad array of companies. Companies matter, because they're all very different. Companies are literally creatures that are organically composed of people with a shared value system. You can't say, Apple announced today, and believe that it's only a corporate act. Any announcement has been approved by legal, and not just legal. Catherine Adams, Apple's general counsel, at the time of writing. It was also likely approved by Luca Maestri, Apple's CFO, at the time of writing. And I'm pretty sure that Tim Cook signed off as well. Investor relations, marketing, production, and sales all had to sign off on it. And because of the announcement, lives are in flux. People will be hired, companies will be bought, people will be fired. Whenever I discuss the success of a growth strategy of a large company, I like to use the 50X rule. Take the number of direct staff involved in executing a strategy and multiply that number by 50. That's how many people within the company it will take for a plan to succeed. And any one of them can potentially cause it to fail. This book is meant to serve as your playbook to develop clean, clear, effective, pragmatic, and executable growth strategies. It's for both new and existing practitioners of our art who aspire to become scientists of the discipline. Through the use of parable, framework, and process, my goal is to educate you about the method used by some of the most successful companies in the world. This method includes organic and inorganic growth, regional and global footprints, large-scale enterprise, and entrepreneurial ventures. The truths of growth are physical laws that we are all bound by. Ideally, you read this because you want to learn. But even if you're being forced to read this for class, you'll learn something that could create a market of billions for you someday. So open your mind, be ready to think, and enjoy learning from some of the best and brightest business minds in the world as they tell you their story. This is incredibly fun stuff. And if you are lucky enough to be responsible for this function, then you know it's pretty rarefied air and should be savored. Chapter 1. The Growth Matrix and the Four Key Questions. Growth is an infinite game, with the revenue line limited only by your ability to convince new or existing customers to buy the products or services you currently or will produce. Ever think about how to bound the question of growth? I'm a growth strategist, so I worry quite a bit about the sources of growth. Where does growth come from? Turns out the question has a simple answer. All revenues come from two variables. One, customers, and two, the goods and or services they buy. Full stop. It's really that simple. Who buys and what they buy? Every business, from the first fish seller bartering his daily catch for salt to the world's biggest consumer goods company, grapples with these two fundamental questions. Let's talk about customers first. Customers. There are all kinds of customers, and they have different values to companies when considered over a time period. Kevin Waters is blazing fast, in every sense. Physically, he's a marathoner, who is a top competitor for his age group. He processes information quickly and insightfully. He is quick to offer his help, and his fast-tracked career is an incredible success story. Currently retired and an adjunct professor at Tulane's Freeman School of Business, Kevin started his career in consumer packaged goods, working for Procter & Gamble, where he received his MBA on top of an MBA through their training program. He then went on to dip his toe in entrepreneurial waters, got married to his amazing wife, Fern, had their first child, and then he needed to go back into the corporate world. He found his way into the world of online banking in 1999 and never looked back. He joined Bank One and was noticed by Jamie Dimon, who asked him to take over as president of their consumer internet group. From there, Kevin took over wholesale banking. When Bank One was acquired by J.P. Morgan Chase, he took over as CEO of business banking and grew it to over a $1 billion business. Being one of the few businesses that managed credit well through the Great Recession, he was asked to fix the wreckage that was the mortgage portfolio, which he did. In his final role at J.P. Morgan Chase, Kevin took over as CEO of their credit card business. We talked about the true value of customers in the world of financial services. Banking is a little bit interesting. It doesn't matter what age you are when you go into Starbucks and you buy a latte. Whether you're 25 or 65, your latte is the same price. Well, in banking, chances are if you're 65, you've got a lot more money than when you were 25. So part of the game is for your existing customers to stay with you, with the more money they have. In your 30s, you're borrowing for your mortgage. In your 40s, your investment account is growing so great. Let's make sure we've got your mortgage and your investment account. You know, in your 20s, I want to make sure you've got a credit card and I have your checking account. But I'm getting everything else as you grow. Within your life, I'm growing with you. And then I'm getting your retirement account. I'm growing up with you. Which is a little bit different than other products, where, you know, like you're buying your latte if you're 25 or 65, is still $4. And thanks. Much different in the banking world. I loved the insight Kevin's example gave. This is just one industry. Every industry and business has their own version of this. As strategists, there are a few important things to consider when you think about customers that I want to talk a bit about. Some basic rules of thumb. All money comes from your customers. All customers are not equal. Customers buy differently. All money comes from your customers. Sounds obvious. But unless you are a business owner or tasked with top-line growth, it is very easy for businesses to lose sight of this simple fact. Why? Because you get wrapped up in your everyday work process, and you can't see the clear link between your customers and your paycheck. At Starbucks, it's easy to see how customers fuel the business. It's a direct transaction. A customer orders a latte, swipes a card, and gets a latte. Any employee can see how that customer relates to their paycheck. However, in some industries, there are indirect customers who you serve. Healthcare is a great example. Depending on where you live in the world, most providers are reimbursed from either a public or private payer, insurance company. Money doesn't come from patients, right? Well, ultimately, Medicare, Medicaid, and military insurance programs are funded through tax dollars. In those public programs, taxes come from the country's citizens, who are effectively its customers. Private insurers are paid by employers or individuals. So even though it's indirect, the customer still pays the bills. These are extreme examples, but you get the point. We also have many clients who worry about their customer's customer. That is, let's say you manufacture a radio component that is part of the Tesla system. You aren't really designing functionality for Tesla. You are designing for Tesla owners, the end users, or your customer's customer. So even though your bills are paid by Tesla, without Tesla's customer base, you won't get paid for very long. That means you likely work to understand the end user's wants and needs. As we consider the source of all revenue, our customers, we have to be sensitive to the indirect trail that the money may flow through. All customers are not equal. Every business has preferred customers. Starbucks has their regular early morning work crowd, and they also happen to serve any out-of-town tourists who strolled in that day. Amazon has major named accounts that spend billions with their Amazon Web Services, AWS business. And they have Cliff Farah, who spends a whole bunch during the holidays, but is otherwise pretty much a non-event to their business. All customers are not equal. As a strategist, it's important to understand and grow the best sources of our revenue and make sure we are focused on them. Customers buy differently. Not every customer acquires in the same way. Some pay cash, others use credit. Some want to own, some want to rent. Some pay by the month, some pay by the drink. As strategists, we have to make it easy for all our different customers to provide us with revenue. Now let's shift to the second question. What do the customers buy? Goods and services. If all money flows from customers, what they buy is driven by the goods and services that you offer. There are some great books about how to market and sell goods and services, and the experts we've interviewed throughout this book will give you real insight into best practices to maximize growth. But before we go swim in the deep end, I'd like to make sure we are aligned in some basic thoughts about goods and services and why they are procured. Some goods and services fill a market need. Many fill a want. Goods and services are definable, measurable offerings. They are things that can be valued. Some goods and services fill a market need. Many fill a want. As a formerly trained economist, I still think in terms of utility and supply and demand. These principles are based on having something of value that is sought in the market. There are lots of ways that products are created, and we talk about a number of examples later in the book. But at the end of the day, we buy things that we need: food, water, shelter, clothing, and things that we want, but don't really need. Sometimes it's a want that is strong enough to make them frivolously spend money. Let's face it, the latest iPods Pro aren't a need, but nutritious food is. We don't have to have ice cream cones, but we do need clean water. Wants have very different challenges in driving growth than needs. Realize what you are offering as you consider how to grow. Goods and services are definable, measurable offerings. In order to transact, you have to be able to bound your offering. People need to know what they are getting for what they are paying. In some markets, this is pretty straightforward. You go to a shoe store and buy a pair of shoes. Definable, measurable. When you get into services, things get much harder to bound. Toss in as a service, and you'll find that lawyers are making a lot of money bounding definitions of what you are and are not buying, as well as your rights to any data produced by your usage. Understanding what you are selling, especially as companies move to offerings that marry product, service, and software, is really important. I talked about this a bit with my good friend, Ray Osrodis. Ray is one of Boston's successful trial attorneys, a twice-published author of Lexis Practice Guides, and has helped me several times throughout the years as Beacon has protected much of its own proprietary and confidential information. He is smart, tireless, fierce, and yet kind and reasonable. Killer combination. I cannot recommend him highly enough, should you ever need a litigator. We talked about how poorly written and defined services agreements can lead to bad outcomes. Especially in the services world, Communication and clarity defining the scope of what is
sample complete. Ready to continue?